Welcome to Westerns with Dad. This is Matt.
And this is Dad.
And today we are talking about The Cowboys. John Wayne film, 1972. Who is the director of this, Dad?
Mark Rydell.
Mark Rydell, yeah. This is Leader Day John Wayne, one of his last films, right?
Yeah, he's about 3 years away from dying of cancer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he is... And it is part of his old man period, I guess you would say. Probably like True Grit on or all kind of old man, Elegy yep. of the West kind of stories. And this is very much one of those, as it turns out.
Yeah.
I think, leaving aside True Grit, or maybe even including True Grit, which is, you know, that is an episode we will do at one point, this might be the best of that period.
Of the old man period?
Yeah, uh-huh.
I think you're right. I really like this film. I really
uh-huh.
do.
You know, I got to tell you, Dad, I was expecting to not enjoy this. I remember watching it as a kid and not responding to it.
Huh. Not even with all the kids in it, huh?
Even with all the kids, yeah. It's funny. My memory of this was we had just seen The Burbs, a Tom Hanks movie. if you don't recall, The Burbs is I think maybe late 80s early 90s satire of suburban life with starring Tom
right.
Hanks. It's kind of a dumb movie, not great,
right.
Bruce Dern is in it. Bruce Dern plays one of the neighbors, like his wacky neighbor, and I enjoyed that movie a lot. I liked Bruce Dern in it a lot. And you're like, oh, you know what Bruce Dern's in? he's great in this movie called The Cowboys. We got to watch The Cowboys. And I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. I didn't respond to it. I gotta say,
wow.
But watching it this time, revisiting it, and I was not in the mood, by the way, when I sat down to watch it. I was kind of like, I gotta get this watched. God, okay, fine. It was late at night. I was just like, well, yeah. This is my best opportunity, and within, you know, probably about a half hour in, I was like, oh no, I was wrong. This is awesome. This is a really good movie. It's a really, really good movie. Really interesting, exciting, well written. Really cool, and a
it's
lot
not formulaic at all. I mean, no. we do have John Wayne as John Wayne.
Yeah, but
that's pretty damn good.
Uh-huh. It's I think maybe part of it, and this is something I don't know, I was playing with this idea while we were watching it, is that even though it's full of kids, even though, you know, the main cast of this is, you know, a dozen or so, 10 to 15-year-old little boys, I think it's kind of not a kid's movie. It might be a film for adults. I think they're the ones
for adults, I think.
You know, going to get something out of this. And,
especially with Bruce Dern.
Sorry, what was that?
Especially with Bruce Dern.
Yeah, man. Well, and boy, you were right about Bruce Dern, too. He's incredible in this. This is as good a Bruce Dern villain as I've ever seen. He's really, really scary in this.
Vicious.
Threatening dude.
Yeah.
everything about it, the concerns of the film are really, you know, stuff that I think adults would pick up on. Because, like, as a boys' adventure story, it's all right, I think, but you know, as a sort of a eulogy for the West and for a story about aging and generations and you know, the turning of the years, and you know, it's wonderful. It's really really good.
It's great.
You know, and
Roscoe Lee Brown, the
he's
cook,
awesome.
he really fits into that scenario as well.
Yeah, that's he might be my MVP, actually, when we get to it.
Really?
Yeah. Despite Wayne and Dern being really, really great in this. Roscoe Lee Brown is fantastic. And I can't think of any other thing I can remember him in. And I've heard the name, I kind of knew who he was, but
I recognize the face and the voice.
Yeah, the voice, very
you know?
Much. Uh-huh.
And I can't think of another movie either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is the
great.
First thing that pops up on his IMDb page, The Cowboys. This is his biggest deal, I guess. But I mean, he worked a lot, but still, this was the best role he might have ever had, and he makes the most of it.
Well, he sure does. He sure does.
Yeah. Should we talk about what happens in this film? The end of this film. Why this film is most famous? A little bit now.
Basic just a quick synopsis of what goes on.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I mean the big matter. Thing that really like. Should we save that for later? But that makes this film so notable. We'll save it for later. Okay.
Okay, save it for later.
Okay. I mean, this is a cattle drive movie. This is that's in a nutshell what it is. The all the men working on John Wayne's ranch. John Wayne as Will Anderson, but really he's just playing John Wayne.
Yep.
They run off to go join a gold rush, leaving him without men for a cross-country cattle drive. Where are they going? Belfourche? Is that the name
of it? Belfourche, yeah. Belfourche. They're up in Montana somewhere, because mm-hmm. they end up going through the Little Bighorn battlefield.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. They're crossing America on a cattle drive, and without any men in the area that he can hire, he's forced to turn to kids, young teenagers or even preteens. You know, some of these kids look about 9 years old.
yeah.
And it is a crucible of fire that they have to, you know, journey into manhood, kind of, while Tom, or John Wayne, I've called him Tom twice now, while John Wayne is also sort of at the end of his life. You know, he's talking about his dead children who would be adults at this point. He's, you know, he's playing a 70-year-old plus character in this movie. And yeah, it's he kind of serves as a father figure for them, and they sort of fill that a similar role for him. And that's the movie. And then it goes nuts in the last third or so. Pretty much. but it's great. I was really surprised by this, and I mean, if you look at reviews online, this big thing that happens in about two thirds of the way through, that's what everyone talks about. That is the point of conversation, and people's reaction to that basically defines what they think of the film. Like Ebert hated it because of that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Uh huh. Yeah, didn't hate it, but said, "Yeah, it's a good movie." And then they screw it up at the end, and I didn't buy his reasoning. I think the ending's great, but yeah, that's we'll get there, I suppose. But mostly coming of age, out in the plains.
Yep. Yeah, but it affords, and I guess we'll talk about this. Might as well talk about it now. It affords John Wayne the opportunity to do what he does best.
Yeah.
And he is such an old pro at it that it just, you know, he's not in True Grit, it's like he's over the top a little bit.
Yes.
You know? And got him an Oscar nomination and an Oscar, but it wasn't his best film. And this is one of his best. And Searchers, I still believe, is his best film. But this is one of his best, I think.
I would agree that of all the films we watched with John Wayne since we started this podcast, I think that The Searchers was the only one I would say was definitely better than this. And that's, you know... Yeah, and that's just because it's sort of an unimpeachable classic of the genre. This is this right. snuck up on me. This is a good one. And and as much as I've enjoyed like pretty much all the ones we've watched with John Wayne, I think maybe with the exception of Hondo, they've all been kind of exceptional in their own way. We may have been cherry picking some of the better ones.
Nothing wrong with that.
No. I mean, you know, and if we're on for years, I'm sure we'll get to the McClintocks and the Chisholms and the War Wagon titles like that.
Chisholm, huh?
Yeah. Mm. Oh, yeah. Mm. We did that. We did that. No, you know what? I like Three Godfathers, too. That was a good one, too.
Three Godfathers. Yeah, that was okay. That was our Christmas movie.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. All available on the website or in the iTunes. Well, not all on iTunes anymore. We'll get to that later, too. Yeah, this one's really strong, and it snuck up on me because I remember being a little bored with it when I was a kid. Not the case this time. I think I'm able to appreciate kids more now than I used to. Maybe. I think I might. Well,
and they're coming of age.
Yeah. Uh huh.
And it takes place pretty fast in this movie.
Oh man, yeah. Uh-huh. There's some stuff that dropped my jaw on this. every now and then they'd be like, "Whoa, I didn't expect that to happen."
I was watching some of the special features on the Blu-ray on this.
Oh yeah, you got the Blu-ray of Cowboys? Nice.
Yeah. It was on sale, I think, somewhere. Anyway, and they were having a little roundtable discussion with Mark Rydell, the director. Bruce Dern was there. The guy that played Cimarron.
Yeah.
And two of the other kids in the Cowboys. And a couple of them, these two, actually after their experience with John Wayne, decided to go into the movies as stuntmen. As cowboy stuntmen.
Oh, wow.
And had a, I guess, fairly successful career doing it.
The kids, they're not, none of them are names, except Robert Carradine is one of them. Otherwise, none of them are recognizable faces now. I think that is to the benefit of the movie, too.
Yep. They said in the special features that half of them were horsemen, you know, that were from cowboy families.
Hmm.
Right, and the other half were actors.
Yeah.
So it was up to the guys that knew their way around horses to teach the actors how to ride, and the actors had to teach these guys, the other guys, how to act.
That's great. Yeah. I really like it. What's that guy in Rio Bravo? There's no Ricky Nelson type.
Ricky Nelson.
Yeah. There's no. There's no, no popular television kids of the time appearing in this. This in fact, was Robert Carradine's first screen credit, who would, go on to make other films, of course.
Is that the guy that was in Revenge of the Nerds?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And other westerns. He's in The Long Riders with other Carradines, if you recall.
Oh. How many Carradines do we have now? John Carradine, which was the patriarch of the family.
And there's David.
And David. Uh-huh. Keith.
Yeah.
And Robert.
I don't know. Well, Robert's one of their kids. I forget which. Probably Keith.
Oh, he's grandson of John.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Oh, okay.
But, boy. You know what? I'm going to screw up the Carradine family tree if I try to patch it together more than that.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. Is it Keith and David who are in Long Riders? I think it might be, now that I think of on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Robert's not. He's in Revenge of the Nerds. Okay. yeah, well, okay, let's, shall we talk about this movie?
Yeah, let's mm-hmm. do it.
What do you think of the, this opening credit sequence?
The opening credit sequence?
Yeah, uh-huh.
Oh, you mean with the overture and the whole thing?
Yeah, it's John Williams' score.
One it
of
is?
His, yeah, John Williams.
Oh, great.
One of his lesser ones, I think. I didn't like the score for this very much. Some people dug it.
I thought it worked okay, but it wasn't memorable.
Nah, but the font. the font is terrific. Font.
I didn't notice the font.
You didn't notice the font? Looks sort of like clay earthenware. there's the big... Big blocks on the capital letters. Oh, it's tremendous font. and it's just overset over images of life on the range. I guess it's breaking horses and roping cattle and riding around and stuff. Yeah,
that was effective. I thought.
Yeah, it is, and it sets the tone. It's like you're gonna see some cowboy action in this. Movie called The Cowboys. We're gonna do some cowboy stuff. It is a bunch of cowboys, you know.
You got your cowboys.
Mm-hmm, yes. And John Wayne is, you know, he's very, very cowboy in this. He's doing all his own stuff. You know, it looks like second nature to him at this point. You know, riding around, roping horses, all that stuff. And, you know, that's what you want. And also just being leathery and, you know, he's kind of wearing that red shirt from the Searchers almost, it looks like. I like that he's married to an old woman in this. I think you rarely saw him, like, married, and certainly not romantically paired with somebody his age. Like, they're just sort of an old...
usually somebody like Maureen O'Hara.
Yeah. they're just... and they're just an old couple, you know? They're just like, you know, like Ma and Pa Kettle types living out on the range. That's great. Him really embracing the old age part of his of what he's doing now, I think.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Which he didn't do it so much in. He kind of did it in True Grit, but what was the? He did a couple of movies in the early 70s that were not. One of them was not a Western. It was Q or something like that.
He
was
McQ. Yeah.
McQ. Yeah. What was he, a Private Eye in London or something like that?
Oh, I haven't seen that. That sounds...
Yeah, it was weird.
That doesn't sound like the thing. The Shootist was the other point of comparison, and I think this is the better film for sure. Shootist is his last movie. Is that right? Yes, it's The Shootist.
Yep, uh-huh. Last movie.
And of course, Rooster Cogburn and The Lady, the sequel to True Grit.
Probably came out pretty close to the same time as the Cowboys, I would guess.
Yeah, he was still pretty prolific at this point. I mean, he was sort of a vestige of the Hollywood system going into the 70s.
Yeah.
Or the studios system, you know, where they would just turn out a bunch of these at a time.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, there was Big Jake in that period.
I remember liking Big Jake.
Yeah, Big Jake's not bad.
I mean, I think we got the big ones there. I mean, like I said, he made how many movies? Over 100 in his career.
Oh, a ton. If you count all those shorter films that he did, you know, pre-Stagecoach.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot more than 100, I think.
Probably. Just a sidebar here. Do you remember seeing this film for the first time?
Nope.
No. Interesting. Nope.
I don't remember seeing it for the first time. I probably saw it in the theater. But in 72, life was...
Oh, yeah, you were out of...
I was just getting ready to graduate from college, and, you know, things were changing in my life, so I don't know. I don't remember seeing it in the theater.
Yeah,
but I'm sure I did because, you know, I couldn't have waited, another 10 years for VCRs to come along.
Damn, right. Uh-huh. I forget how hard you guys had it. what's going on is Wayne's employees kind of, you know,
flake out on you.
Yeah, they back out on him because there's a gold rush and they want to go look for gold. And he's sort of a stubborn, like, you know, taskmaster about it and doesn't really, you know, and just is like, well, don't you ever come back kind of attitude towards
himself. Get the hell off my place.
Yeah. And, you know, and so he is left without a crew and they're not sure what they're going to do about this cattle drive that they're planning. And he's talking about it with his wife, and they lament being old a little bit. And and then he just happens to be hanging out with Slim Pickens, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. His buddy Slim Pickens.
I thought Slim Pickens was going to have more to do in this movie once I saw him, but he doesn't. This is a brief cameo where he goes with John Wayne to the school, and they watch the children together.
Was his idea.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to look at the... I was going to go watch the kids at school. You want to come by with me?
Well, what was it? They happened to be riding by the schoolhouse, and Slim Pickens says, "How about kids? How about kids?"
I mean, oh, that would never work, or would it? Yeah. Yeah, they go into one of them old-timey Western schoolrooms, you know.
Yep.
One classroom for every grade, and they kind of just watch the kids. I don't think he actually makes an offer or anything until they show up looking for work. Is that right? Or
yeah, mm-hmm. they actually show up at the ranch.
Mm-hmm.
He puts out an announcement or something that he wants hands, and then you know come to the ranch and be there by five o'clock in the morning on such a day. And all these kids show up.
Yeah, and he's like, "Ah, you can't do this. You're kids or whatever." And here, I'll prove it to you. This is a bad John Wayne right now. I'm losing my John Wayne dad. Well, he takes him out to the horse. You know, the horse out in the corral. That the wildest of his horses. That you know. Then says, "If you can stay on him for 10 seconds, then maybe we'll think about it." You know, and they all do, right? They're all able to stay on this horse for 10 seconds.
Yeah. That's the one thing they said they could do is ride.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And you get the sense that Wayne was kind of expecting him to blow it, and he's a little miffed. And he says,
between a rock and a hard place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think we meet the two that... Well, how many kids would you say are, like... significant in this? I think there's four names. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And let's see Robert Carradine, yeah. Cimarron,
uh-huh.
The kid with glasses, what's his name?
His name's Dan, or I just Dan. I was writing Four Eyes in my notes because you don't
Four Eyes
until
right
later. And and then there's Charlie, who has one scene of note, and that's about, and there's a fat kid, and then
right.
And that's all I... the fat kid isn't even that fat, but they just call him fat.
Right.
But yeah, Honeycutt Slim is Robert Carradine's character name, which is pretty good. He's the first to ride, the oldest one at 15, and... or is Cimarron older? He's sort of a...
Cimarron looks older.
He looks a bit older.
A little more experienced than everything, but yeah, uh-huh. he's not one of the group from the school.
Yeah, he's like the tough kid, you know, that doesn't go to school. He probably smokes right cigarettes or something, you know, like he's... Is he Mexican? Is that right? Or is he a...
He looks kind of half-breedish, half-ish, or something.
Yeah, uh-huh, mixed race of some kind, yeah. Sort of an outcast, you know, in society kind of type, and you know, and as a result is kind of tougher and meaner and you know, less trusting of everyone, so yeah, that's a trope in movies about groups of kids. There's always the one kid who's kind of, you know, the outsider, the tough guy, the, you know, the James Dean type one,
right?
Yeah. So having impressed him, he does show up at school again, and this is a good scene. Takes over school, basically. Dismisses all the women, and including the teacher. I got something to talk about with the men here. I got nothing to say to the young ladies. You can take them outside.
And then what does the school teacher say? We bow to the... not superiority. What did she say? We bow to a man's world or something like that.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is definitely a movie for dudes. This is this has masculine concerns pretty much top to bottom, I would say.
Yeah.
So he invites them all to come along for work, you know, and he's a real hard ass about it. And even the little one wants to join, and so he's like, "Yeah, get up here. Anyone taller than this kid," basically, draws a line on the chalkboard. And then they of course lower the chalkboard after he leaves, and so they all want to do
They're all in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was a little guy that ended up being an ace roper.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There is the little guy. You've fallen him around a little bit too. Again, I couldn't tell you his name. He does get more screen time though, more reaction shots than a lot of the other ones. So when they show up for the work, they all get in a fight immediately. That'd be Robert Carradine and Cimarron. And Cimarron, I believe, pulls a knife, so he gets fired. Is that right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, plus he called him a son of a whore in Spanish.
Oh yes, that's right. He calls him a puta. That's.
Yeah.
Puta.
Hijo de puta.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. And teaches him, fires him on the spot. And then they get the learning to be cowboys kind of practice montage.
Right.
Yeah. This movie, I gotta say, reminded me of City Slickers a lot. I think it has a lot of the same structure.
That part, yeah.
Oh, and the I'm just the cattle drive and the multitude of funerals that they have to have throughout. I always figured Red River was the inspiration for City Slickers, but I think this probably, this was as much in the creative hopper and Billy Crystal and the writers' minds,
right.
Because it, I mean, again, this is as good a cattle drive Western as I've seen, I would say.
Yeah.
And that's a nice subgenre, actually. We've seen a few of those now. Next episode will be about a cattle drive as well. And this is a great vehicle for the Western, I would say, the cattle drive. I mean, because it includes all the things about a Western.
Yeah.
There's going to be a lot of vignettes that you would expect to see just naturally occurring. Fording the river, hanging out around the campfire. A lot of roping. There'll probably be bad guys showing up at one point or another, and just
falling off your horse among the cows.
Mm-hmm.
That always happens at mm-hmm. one point.
And just bros hanging out, just broing it up. Dudes being dudes together and talking about life. And the old loves that they once had,
Then, of course, there's the time-honored trope of playing a Vivaldi guitar concerto around the campfire.
Well, there's playing music always. There's always playing music around a campfire.
I actually love that part where they actually work the Vivaldi guitar concerto into the soundtrack of the movie.
Mm, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was great.
Yeah, one of the best score moments in this. It's a fine score. It's not like I didn't like it much, but it's just overactive, I think.
Yeah.
Elmer Bernstein, one thing about an Elmer Bernstein score is he kind of picks his moments. There's the big sweeping themes, but this is an active score. This is, early John Williams.
I'll have to watch it again and listen more to the score.
No, the point is it's not worth it. Bruce Dern shows up about now. The great Bruce Dern, who is the bad guy in this film. There is a name that the character had on Wikipedia when I was looking it up, but they just call him Long Hair.
Asa something or other.
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah. He's Long Hair, I think. That's how he's credited, and it's what the kids call him. This first scene, I like this first scene when he shows up asking for work, at the ranch, and he's playing it fairly straight. He's trying to create as good an impression as any, like him and his boys are showing up looking for work, but just the fact that he's Bruce Dern makes him unsettling right away, like he's not trustworthy on his face because he's Bruce Dern. And when John Wayne kind of pushes him, he's like, yeah, I'm not telling you the truth. We're actually convicts. No one will hire convicts. I didn't want to say.
Right. But it doesn't. John Wayne doesn't hold that against him.
Yeah, I don't mind you being
a liar.
Yeah.
The fact that he's a liar is he's out of John Wayne's league.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're a hard man, Mr. Anderson. It's a hard life. And
and then he gets a little sinister when he says, "Oh, what are you gonna do for hands on this drive, Mr. Anderson? You gonna go to Belfouche with a bunch of kids?"
Yeah. And there's a sort of a rattlesnake sting on the music as he leaps.
He even sticks out his tongue a little bit, I recall.
Oh, he's such a... this is Bruce Dern leaning into being a villain as much as I've ever seen him do. It's wonderful. This is a strong bad guy performance. He's not in it much, but man, does he make his moments count. Real frightening. they're a charming family unit here. Learning everything out on the range, you know. Mom feeding them, you know, giant dinners at the end of a day. They're eating a little much, a little too much for John Wayne's taste. and then Roscoe.
I was going to say about Bruce Dern and the special features. They were interviewing these two guys that were three of them that were part of the Cowboys, and they all said Bruce Dern scared the hell out of them.
Yeah, I mean, it's something to see Bruce Dern, like, openly threatening children. He definitely looks like he means it.
Yeah.
Roscoe Lee Brown shows up at this point. We talked about him a little. He's playing Jebediah Nightlinger, the cook. He is wonderful. He's a great performance. He's sort of a fill-in for somebody who couldn't make it. Kind of deal.
Right. The regular guy couldn't make it, so Roscoe's in.
Mm-hmm. And it's not John Wayne who drops the N-word, is it?
No.
No, it's one of the kids. Yeah, uh-huh. And it doesn't have the impact it would if it happened now, or even in Blazing Saddles, because it's, they're doing it as a Western, and it's, you know, said without that kind of invective that you would often hear. It's more of a descriptive, but it is just like a whoa kind of moment.
Then, of course, Bruce Dern uses it.
Oh, Bruce
liberally.
Dern uses it with invective, yes. Yeah. They have him bunking with the kids because he's joining up. They sign him on immediately. He's bunking with the kids. And that first scene, when he walks in, they're just staring at him because they've never seen a black man before.
That's a great scene.
It is a great scene. It's weird and uncomfortable in the 70s way for a moment, you know, when they're talking like, is everything black? Even, you know, down there, all that stuff.
That's right.
But man, when he starts telling this story, when he starts telling this crazy story about his Moorish father who became the king of some sort of Arabian
empire,
real Aladdin stuff. He just spins this story out with his great Roscoe Lee Brown voice, and it that character clicks immediately at that point. It's great. It's
yeah.
Is that true, Mister? And he's like, yeah, if it isn't true, it ought to be.
It ought to be.
That's a great
bit.
That's
great.
Yeah. And, big cattle drive movie starting up now. And a cattle drive is a series of vignettes, usually, dealing with outdoor life. I mean, we kind of elaborated on what a lot of those are earlier. Any scene where Roscoe Lee Brown and John Wayne are interacting is immediately great, you know. Yeah. Whatever they're talking about, if they're talking about, you know, the girl that Roscoe Lee Brown once knew, it's great, you know. It reminds me of the stuff again in City Slickers with Jack Palance, you know.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Jack Palance-y kind of stuff in this movie now that I think about it. Bruce Dern is doing a very Jack Palance-y performance, too. They talk about sharing, serving in the Civil War together, you know. Jebediah shot his commanding officer in the ass at one point. And John right. Wayne says, well, they, you know what, they used to call me Old Iron Pants.
He says, I'd have hung you.
You know, what are the main sequences here of the cattle drive that you recall mostly? I mean, the first one, I guess.
There's the learning curve. I mean, you've got these kids. They had, what, a couple of days back at the ranch?
Yeah.
To learn some of the ins and outs of cattle driving.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the real thing now, and they're learning about, you know, catching strays. Robert Carradine has a problem going across a river.
Yeah.
You know.
Mm-hmm. And that is when Cimarron rides in and saves him after he has been following them for a few days.
That's right. And yeah, that's when he becomes part of the gang.
Yeah. And, yeah, him and... I figured him and Slim, Robert Carradine, were going to have some sort of rivalry, but it's kind of quashed after that.
Yeah, give them, good
give them a shiny rock and their friends.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. It's the stutterer's fault. One of the kids.
Oh yeah.
Was stuttering, so he couldn't yell that that Slim had fallen off the horse, or, and just John Wayne just shames him in front of everybody. Just starts yelling at him real hard and gets him so mad that he loses his stutter, and he's like, "Yeah, that's what my entire point was all along," or something.
What is it he keeps repeating? You. Mm-hmm. Goddamn son of a bitch or something like that.
I'm pretty sure it's goddamn son of a bitch, yeah. Uh-huh. Say that again. Yeah.
Yeah, over and over again, and finally mm-hmm. says, I'd be careful about calling me that in the future.
Yeah. He's, you know, it's tough love with an emphasis on tough.
Yeah.
I would say.
Yeah.
You know, there's very little, he's never cuddly. That I think is the biggest success of this film is that, you know, if he warms at all to them, it's very, you know, incrementally in a taciturn kind of quiet. There's no big scene, you know, or it's...
Only at the very end.
Uh-huh. But even then, it's, you know, it's brusque, you know. It's
yeah.
It's manly and sort of stoic. He's just tough on him. He's just tough as hell on him, you know. He lets him get away with the drinking. You know, there's the scene where they steal the liquor and kind of love that.
Oh, Nightlinger stopped him from interfering.
Yeah, that's true.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to step in, and Nightlinger stopped him.
Yeah, that's a great sequence. They get shit-faced, and yeah. And the kids all fall asleep, and they have another reminiscing session. I believe at one point we find out that Wayne's kids have both died. You know, they had two sons, right. They both passed, and you know, and then Roscoe Lee Brown's like, "Hey, it's not too late. You can be a father to these kids here." And he's like, "Yeah, nah." Mm-hmm. Speaking of those kids being hungover, I don't remember ever getting hungover when I was young.
No.
It was in my,
well,
you know,
nor did I.
Yeah. That wasn't until I hit my 30s, I would say, and then it became a much bigger issue. I don't know. I mean, maybe if you're 10, you can do it.
I've only been really drunk a couple times in my life.
Oh, yeah?
Yep.
Really?
Uh-huh. Yep. One was on driving across the states, and we went to dinner with Karen's parents in Philadelphia, just outside of Philadelphia, and had to drive from their place back into the city, and I was not fit to drive.
Oh, yeah?
I was driving anyway. It was bad. Yeah, bad, oh, bad, bad, Dad. Bad.
So, yeah. Uh-huh.
The other time was when I was in France on my sabbatical. And this doesn't have anything to do with the Cowboys, does it?
Oh, no. This anyway. Is great. This does. This is awesome.
George Bush, G-Dub, had just been reelected, and I was... I called up a couple of expat Brits living in Burgundy there and said, I need to drown my sorrows. Mm-hmm. You want to go with me? And they said, well, we can't afford to go with you. Why don't you come over here? And so I went over to their place, and long night of drinking and playing cards and games and stuff, talking and laughing, and drove home at 5 miles an hour in a driving rain. Fortunately, it was like 1 o'clock in the morning, and nobody was on the road. But once again, I shouldn't have been driving. But those are the only two times I can think of where I was actually seriously drunk.
I mean, I saw you at a few softball team parties, or, you know, maybe once or twice. Had a,
oh, a little loose,
on,
but
out
not,
on Vashon Island.
Drunk.
Yeah, okay. I remember also getting very drunk on the night that W was reelected. I have very strong memories of that. I'm gonna admit that I've been very drunk more than a few times. More than two.
So you can identify with the kids and the Cowboys, huh?
Oh, sure. It wasn't till later. Not in high school. I wasn't drinking in high school, Dad.
No.
Not until college. That's when you get drunk. Oh, this is great. Okay. All right, so glasses kid, Danny. I think it's Danny. Anyway, Four Eyes.
Yeah, Dan.
He goes off after a stray, you know, gets away from the group and runs into Bruce Dern. And this is where Bruce Dern is straight up threatening children for the first time. Him and his boys are kind of following along. And, you know, he's like, don't you be telling that Mr. Anderson that any bad men are following him. You wouldn't want to be doing that.
Well, puts a knife to his throat,
oh,
right?
Yeah, I mean, he traces a, I wouldn't want me to show up in the night and cut your little throat. Yeah. Jeez. Uh-huh. I mean, it looked like he was going to kill that kid right then and there. Frankly, I'm not sure why he let him go. I mean, if he, you know, considering that he's a horrible, evil guy already. Like,
well, that would have been a dead giveaway that something was wrong.
That's true. That's true. Mm-hmm. That's exactly right, yeah. Mm-hmm. And they're getting into, like, looks like Northern California here. There's gorgeous, like, birch forest where they spend most of the rest of the film, kind of
right
out in the middle of the mountains. God, this is where the movie really starts to look pretty.
Mm-hmm.
Good-looking movie, too. Like, you know, this is a little later, you know, 1972, so, you know, the film quality is a bit better just even off of streaming. It's, I've seen some, you know, Blu-rays that from that time that, you know, don't quite hold up. This one, I bet, looked amazing.
It was nice. Mm-hmm. Not quite as nice as The Searchers, but...
Yeah, well. Nice. And, of course, Four Eyes does keep quiet. He's, you know, he's scared of Bruce Dern, so he doesn't say anything. Would it have helped at all? I guess he should have said something, huh?
He should have.
Yeah, uh-huh.
But he was scared.
Yeah. Mm. He gets pretty rattled, and... And this is something that shocked me, this next sequence that follows, when he drops his glasses into the group of cows, and...
oh, yeah.
And his buddy... friend, yeah, Charlie goes out to get it, and falls off his horse and is stampeded by cows to death.
Did we need it to see a kid die?
Well, honestly... I feel like if they were going to kill a kid now, I mean, maybe maybe later would have made more sense, you know? Like, if they're going to establish that this is a world where children can indeed get killed, you know, by accident or by whatever, then maybe the ending should have been a little different. I couldn't believe it. I thought, wow, this is actually a very suspenseful scene, and I know that, you know, that nothing's going to happen to this kid, and then indeed that kid gets killed, and they have to bury him in the desert.
Yeah, that was a little surprising.
Uh-huh. It blew my mind. I was like, whoa. this is like a, you know, this little, he's like an 11-year-old kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, they wrap him in a sack and bury him in the open plain. And, and all because of this little nerdlinger in his glasses. This
yeah, nerdlinger.
He just keeps screwing up, this kid. He doesn't really get a redemptive thing either later. He just keeps blowing it. And that is when they pass shortly after that by the Sioux, because they just move off that moment. Like, you know, well, that's part of a trail, you know, cattle drive, you know. Every now and then someone dies. Mm-hmm. And then on with the rest of the film. This is when John Wayne separates to go check on the status of the Sioux. The Sioux Nation, which is apparently riding in the area. And that's not a thing in the movie. They aside from that one arrowhead, you know, no presence.
No, we don't see any Indians at all.
None. Mm-hmm. We just lose John Wayne for 10 minutes so they can have the adventure of the prostitutes.
Right. The adventure of the prostitutes.
Yeah. They run into, it was the older boys, tastefully, Robert Carradine and Cimarron, find some ladies washing clothes in the river. And they are, turns out that it is a group of traveling prostitutes led by Colleen Dewhurst.
Yeah.
Some kind of
speaking
madam.
Of old pros, she's yeah. great too.
This is another twist I didn't really see coming, which is the boys kind of freak out about how sexual they are, and you know, or Carradine rides off, you know, in terror, and and Cimarron is kind of intrigued. He's like, all right, I'm gonna see how this plays out.
He's playing it cool, trying to be an adult,
Then he tells Colleen Dewhurst that she's old enough to be his mom.
Yeah, she didn't want to hear that.
Yeah. And then Jebediah comes and collects them. Roscoe Lee Brown, another great Roscoe Lee Brown scene here.
Oh yeah.
He's kind of bartering, like reasoning with the prostitutes, you know, being like, well, you know, they're children. I think they might be. Might be more interested in you. Might be better for them if they were to meet you a year from now, or even 2 years from now. That might be better for everyone. And he's got a great line at the end, too, which is, well, what about you? And he's like, well, I know what I'm doing, and I have the inclination, but I just don't have the time.
Yeah.
Interesting detour.
And the wherewithal, too. Yeah, the
wherewithal.
Wherewithal, yes.
Yeah, it's a surprising scene, I guess. It doesn't amount to much, other than, you know.
Doesn't really affect the plot at all, but I thought it was a great little scene.
It is a great little scene, and I mean, this is sort of episodic in, you know, this movie. It's little vignettes right. that kind of form a whole together, you know, a wealth of experiences until the end kicks in, you know, when there is a major plot. But
right.
up until that point, you know, there's an hour of this movie that's just little scenes like that, you know, getting drunk, fording the river, you know, take this shiny rock, all that stuff. And it's all very well done, though. It's great. I mean, it's a good format for a Western. So now we're getting into it with Bruce Dern, and they become aware that Bruce Dern and his dudes are following them. Four Eyes confesses, it's too late to help.
John Wayne gets back from Fort Smith, and
mm-hmm.
Apparently the Indians are not a problem.
Yeah, I guess not. They're, you know, kind of trying to outmaneuver these guys. They know it's going to come to it. John Wayne has a line, something like, I know you're what I need you to be is young boys right now. I know you're more than that, but it's best if you're just young boys for now. And then you get the big scene. Yeah.
The big scene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They come in and surround them at the campfire.
Yeah.
That night.
Mm-hmm. Intimidating. So what this is, I guess, now is when we say, is this is the scene where John Wayne gets killed, basically. This is the John Wayne death scene. And this is probably the best death scene of his career. He didn't die often.
Three or four times.
Yeah, mostly in the war films.
He died in Sands of Iwo Jima. He died in The Shootist.
Of course, The Shootist, yeah.
Yeah, he died in Cowboys.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there might have been one other.
There was the Wake of the Red Witch.
Wake of the Red Witch. Which is right.
Like a Navy movie or something like that. It almost never happened, and as such, this has got to be the most significant John Wayne father figure kind of death thing. This is it, you know. He always had kind of a, you know, cool dad kind of vibe to him, you know, role model for his young audience, and this movie he very much is doing that, you know, leading a bunch of teenagers, you know, on a cattle drive, and then he gets killed, and you know, he is his death, and that is what people remember about this film. I've found this is all the reviews talk about this. Every single one is just like, so this is the movie where John Wayne dies.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it is a hell of a death.
You know,
too.
They did the scene really well.
Yes, it's really a great scene.
And Bruce Dern is so incredibly despicable.
This is Bruce
and
Dern.
Cowardly.
Yeah.
Oh man, I love it. I love it when he said, "I see how John Wayne says something like, I see how you are with little kids. You want to try it with somebody your own size?"
Yeah.
I can't remember his exact words.
I wrote
Bruce
a few
Dern
of his things here.
Decides to accommodate him. And he says, oh, God, what's the line? He said, John Wayne says, you know, I'm 60-some-odd years old, and on my worst day, I can beat the hell out of you.
Yeah. Dern says something like, well, do I look like the sort of guy who'd kill children or something like that? And he said, you look like a vermin-ridden son of a bitch.
That you are.
Yeah. That's, you look like the vermin-ridden son of a bitch that you are, yeah. It's sort of a have you no honor quality to it. John Wayne's delivery. Uh-huh. And then they have a big fist fight. He shames him into having a fist fight with him, and it's a great fist fight. Because it doesn't have good choreography. It's like a realistic one, you know?
Right.
These are just these just big dudes, and they're just big old slobber knockers, you know, just, you know, like Captain Kirk style, just like, you know, fists, you know, yeah, pop, you know, like, roundhouse, double fisting punches, you know, it looks like two old guys
slamming
fighting
into trees.
Yeah.
And
oh, yeah, the tree. Uh-huh. Yep. And John Wayne beats his ass. Great.
Yep.
It's not a complete domination, but more or less by the end, you know, John Wayne wins for sure. And Dern back shoots him.
Yeah. He shoots him in the leg. First of all, he grabs a gun from somebody else because he's thrown his gun down to have the fist fight, right?
Yeah.
So cowardly Bruce Dern grabs one of his men's guns, shoots him in the leg, and then shoots him in the arm. And all this time, John Wayne's walking away from him.
Yeah.
And finally gets him to turn around and shoots him in the stomach or the chest or something.
Mm-hmm.
And
he takes
that's when Wayne goes down definitively.
Yeah, about a half dozen bullets, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And yeah, they take the herd in the middle of the night, I guess, and leave the kids there. And I'm like, what? They're not going to do anything.
And Nightlinger's not there.
Nightlinger's away because
Brown's
the...
not there. He's fixing the wagon.
Yeah, his wagon wheel broke. It fell off, so he's some miles back catching up kind of thing. So that's why he's not there. Oh. But he shows up the next day. And after the bad guys leave and John Wayne is left there with the kids, John Wayne is still alive at this point. Gets to, you know, do a little bit of a quick death speech. I thought that was unnecessary.
Oh, really? I thought it was a good speech.
I thought it would have been more effective if he just died, you know, when Bruce Dern shot him 5 times. Because the actual death still is off camera, you know. He just says a few words and then cut to a grave.
Yeah, but the words are important,
yeah.
You know, to the kids. This is,
I think they knew him.
I'm proud of you, every one of you. And guy always wants his kids to be better than he is. And you are.
Yeah, yeah. You gotta give him a death speech, I guess. Being as how he never died in movies. Yeah, and then Roscoe Lee Brown's got a great eulogy. And they subdue him to go pursue vengeance.
That's right. They got all their guns locked up in the wagon, and they tie up Roscoe Lee Brown to get the guns.
I totally did a fist pump in the air at that point. It's great. It's a great moment. It's a problematic moment in some critics' appraisals. Pauline Kael was like, "Yeah, it's ridiculous that the end of this movie is that they complete their journey to manhood by
killing all these guys,
yeah, by becoming instruments of vengeance of you know they're murderers at the end, yeah, kind of. I mean, and there's no equivocation about that either. You know, they are stabbing guys in the heart and stuff.
Yeah.
So what this is." They decide, no, we're taking the herd back to Belle Fouche ourselves. That's, you know, that's what Will Anderson would have wanted, John Wayne's character. And so they're going to go basically murder these guys and get the herd back. Certainly kill Bruce Dern. And you know, they've got Roscoe Lee Brown tied up, and he's just kind of like, you know what? You better done tie me, and I'll help you. I think it's a good idea.
You gotta have a plan.
Yeah. Yeah, so they do, and it's all of them, and the plan is sort of, you know, I don't know, Lost Boys tactics. I have to admit, the final action sequence here, it's not the best. It's it doesn't make a lot of sense.
No, but satisfying.
But yeah, I mean, it's pretty cool to see these guys, you know, again, straight murdering all these dudes. Like, it's pretty thrilling, actually. You know,
they're instruments of justice.
Yes, yes. But I like the darker quality to it. I think that's kind of awesome that there is an edge to that, which is, you know, that to become men, they become these instruments of justice. And that does entail stabbing dudes in the heart and, you know, dropping nooses around their neck and yanking them off horses and stuff like that. It's really badass.
Yep.
You know, and it does present the world that this is presented in, you know, the tough love, kind of the really tough love that John Wayne has been pretty much advocating the whole movie, exists in a world where this is a rite of manhood, yep, almost.
And acceptable.
Necessary.
Yeah.
Yeah, uh-huh. Because there's murderers out there. And that's the worldview.
Right.
Which, you know, that's the Western. And this one doesn't shy away from it. I think it's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. I think it's pretty good.
You can't just end the movie with John Wayne's death.
Hell no.
And the kids going back to
this is definitely the ending.
Going back to the ranch.
It's and I think that the fact that it's kind of chilling is great. You know, I don't know if it's the film advocates it completely, which, you know, I think if this were maybe a Clint Eastwood movie, there'd be a little bit more gray area there. But I still like it a lot. I think it's really, really powerful. Even though the action sequence of it itself was, you know, the way it all resolves finally is Roscoe Lee Brown is kind of set up as a bait.
Right.
Yeah, at the campground, and they come down there to, and they decide they're going to lynch him because he's a black guy, and there are hints that Bruce Dern is an ex-Confederate throughout, complaining about carpetbaggers and what have you, and yeah, pretty free with the N-word at that point. He's got that great speech too, Roscoe Lee Brown.
His last words?
Yeah. Can I get right with my God first?
Yeah.
And, you know, he lists off some of his sins, and then, forgive me for all the men I have killed in anger, especially the ones I am about to.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then these 10-year-old kids pop out of the woods with rifles and just start mowing everyone down.
Yeah, you'd think that... one of them, you know, might get nicked or something.
This is the thing. This is the thing. And yeah, this is something that Ebert talks about in his review, actually, which is that this is a world where kids get killed. There might be maybe some cost to this at the end. It's not just, you know, instead of turning into like the Lost Boys and Peter Pan or something where, you know, they're all just preternaturally able to mow down hardened criminals and and no one takes the loss at that point. I mean, they have the element of surprise for sure, and John Wayne taught them, of course, to be hard ass tough men, but cow men, as it were. but yeah, it strains credulity a little bit, and I think if the final action sequence had been like, you know, exactly, then this movie is the movie's a masterpiece for me. If they nail this final bit, it's still pretty great.
What would you have done differently?
I mean, mostly my concern is just the structure of it as an action sequence. I don't think that it works very well geographically. Like, you're never really sure what their plan is or what they're doing or where they are in relation to the other guys. It's not thrilling as a sequence. And also, you know, the fact that it kind of comes cheap, I think, in that they're just able to pop up out of the bushes and kill, what, a dozen guys, you know?
Yeah.
With no losses and no scene of them planning. And, I mean, some of that maybe is just that they're not overly established as characters. They're more of a sort of an amalgam or a group of kids, you know, a group that kind of grows together, which it works really well. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you're not feeling the loss. And, again, if this were more of a, you know, boys' adventure story, you know, then that would probably be okay, the way that this plays out. But, you know, this already is a world where kids are getting murdered by, you know, getting run over by cows, you know, and buried in the desert. Right. So, I don't know. I will say that the end of Bruce Dern is delightful. It's just wonderful.
Yeah.
There's no question about that. That's excellent. I mean, if anything, I want him to go out harder.
Well, you just see him being dragged off by the horse,
mm-hmm.
on his broken leg.
Yeah, one assumes he's dead because they've killed everyone else.
One assumes he's dead. Yeah, that's just it. One assumes he's dead. You got to make sure.
Yeah, they certainly weren't. We don't have to assume with the other dudes, the nameless guys he was riding with. You know, we see them go down.
Yeah.
And so it's not like the movie's pulling its punches at this point, and then if anyone's, you know, if anyone's earned a bad death so far, it's Bruce Dern. So, yeah. Yeah, his horse falls on his leg, and he gets to do some cowardly begging, and the kids aren't having it, and they just send the horse dragging him off into the river.
Get the reins loosed, yeah.
And, yeah, I'm sure he died, but... And, I mean, that's basically it. You know, they end up in Belfouche, and they commission a
gravestone for Will Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And they go back out to the place where he's buried when the temporary grave has been washed away. And they're just, Ross Gully Brown's just like, ah, here's good enough. Awesome. Well, this is a good movie, Dad. I you know, I hadn't intended, I hadn't expected to enjoy this nearly as much as I did, but man, I really had a good time with this, and it totally won me over and fast.
And I've seen it once again, you know, like mm-hmm. most John Wayne movies, a half a dozen times at least.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, and I only remember seeing it the once. I'm going to see it again now for sure. This is definitely a film I'm going to revisit. This is great.
Yeah,
a very entertaining movie. Also, want to mention this. This episode was a one that has been requested a few times. Let's see. A gentleman named Wayne. Thank you very much for the recommendation. I do have to say that we were, you know, this was always going to be one that we did, but specifically wanted to call out. Thank you very much for that. We really appreciate that, and that, yeah, I mean, this is definitely a film worth examination, and I think that something that people would enjoy discovering now. Like, I'm sure there's a lot of people that haven't seen this movie, and it's well worth it. One of the best John Waynes, I would say.
How many stars?
4 out of 5 for me.
That's what I would say.
Yeah? Yep. Oh, I thought you were going. I thought you were going to go hard.
I might go 4.5, but it's just not. I don't know what there is about it that keeps it from being a 5, because mm-hmm. it's a great film.
I think just a little total inconsistency.
Because John Wayne is too John Wayne, you know, the ending, you know. But he John Wayne's performance is great.
Yep.
It works so well in the film.
I think what
all the performances are good.
I think what is required of this film is that he be as John Wayne as possible. Like, he's the most John Wayne that ever John Wayne'd in this, you know. And that's why I wouldn't even say it's like one of John Wayne's best performances. But I think what this film is drawing on and using is the icon John Wayne, you know, like everything that John Wayne represents.
And all that vast experience.
Yeah, uh-huh. And who he is in the history of the Western, you know, who he is to fans of the Western. Like, this is, you know, everything that he has been for the last, you know, 30 years at this point is, you know, or longer, you know, culminating in this kind of, this character of this importance. You know, it's, and not to say it's, you know, a landmark performance. It's just using him as an icon, you know.
I think it's his last great film.
Yeah. Yeah, I would have to agree with that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is the best of the old man Wayne, you know, era that, like, that I think, like I was saying. There's a few I haven't seen. I have to revisit The Shootist, probably. Maybe we'll do that for this podcast. But yeah. And the fact that he dies, I think, is... Well, I mean, it's what makes the film so significant and memorable, really. But it also kind of, you know, underpins what the movie's about, you know, which is the turning of generations and you know, how the boys become men and, you know, and yeah, replace, you know, come to, you know, take the role that, you know, of their mentor ultimately in life. Even though there is sort of a generational gap here. He's like a grandfather to them, but still, like, it's just that he's John Wayne as well. You know, really, really strong film, very recommendable. You know, and just because it does interesting things and it, entertaining throughout, really good performances, 3 great lead performances, I would say. I mean, I talked about Roscoe Lee Brown a little. I'm gonna Murray can't. John Wayne's the MVP for his importance to the film. But man, Roscoe Lee Brown is great. It is a great performance, you know.
Yep.
He's terrific, and he really holds the story when John Wayne's not around as well. And also, when John Wayne is, that the best scenes are the two of them talking. Or Bruce Dern, I guess. Who's, again, never been better as a bad guy.
Well, it's interesting. In the special features, Mark Rydell is sitting with all these guys from the movie. And they talk about John Wayne. And he says, I didn't want John Wayne. Because we were so...
Shocking.
We were at the opposite extremes of the political spectrum. He says, John Wayne was just so, you know, had the reputation of being so conservative. And I tended to be on the liberal end. And I was just wondering how we would be able to see eye to eye on the direction of this movie. And, but the studio said, nope, we want John Wayne. So he went to interview John Wayne. And John Wayne was the sweetest, nicest, most humble guy in accepting the role. He just, you know, was grateful to have the role. He really wanted the role, you know, and kept that all the way through the shooting.
Just a great guy. That was a time when liberals and conservatives could work together very easily.
Yeah.
Compared to...
Yeah.
they both wanted the same things ultimately for the country. That's actually really interesting that this actually kind of came from both a liberal and conservative point of view. I can kind of see that. I mean, but with the way it ends and all that, that certainly takes it in a conservative direction. But even still, like that's pretty interesting. That's great. Did you know this was going to be remade?
No.
Plans fell apart. Didn't happen. It was supposed to happen about 5 years ago. Tommy Lee Jones was trying to get it done.
Well, he might have been good.
Might have been good. Wouldn't have been the same, though. Wouldn't have had the...
No.
Wouldn't have had the iconic...
same cachet.
Yeah, uh-huh. I mean, I think that there are ways, you know, to improve maybe a few structural issues with this film, but beyond that, like, you know... Yeah, the personality of it, and the loss of, you know, not having John Wayne in the lead role, which I think about it, I feel is crucial to this thing as a whole. You know, I'm glad it didn't happen, I guess. And John Wayne or Tommy Lee Jones has certainly had some other opportunities to do some good Western roles, which we'll be talking about very soon.
Next time, yeah.
What have you? Been watching lately, Dad, other than the Cowboys? You've been in France, I know.
What did I watch?
You've been out of town on
vacation?
Yeah,
out of town. We watched,
surely on the plane. Surely on the plane you watched something.
Oh, I did. I watched Kong, Skull Island.
Okay, I don't know why that's funny to me, but
yeah.
It was.
Yeah, it was terrible. It was just so bad. So bad. I watched John Wick 2 again.
Oh, well, that's just terrific. Yeah. talk a little bit more about Kong Skull Island, Dad. Tell me what you...
Oh, my God. It was just an opportunity, you know, to use CGI and special effects. And it was... kind of a juvenile plot where...
What did you think of Samuel L. Jackson in that?
Did you see it?
I saw it, yes.
I thought that his character was ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, and the fact that he wants to kill Kong.
That's revenge
because,
on Kong, yeah.
Because Kong killed a couple of his men, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The fact that Kong actually ends up being a good guy.
Yeah, he's not so bad.
No. No, he saves him from the whatever that thing was.
Yeah, the were they called Skullwalkers? Is that right?
I can't remember.
Yeah. Okay. Uh-huh.
But it was an airplane movie. What can I say?
I watched a movie that I was considering for this podcast because I thought it would be fun to talk about with you. It probably would be one of these days, but it's not right for us. That was The Dark Tower in theaters now, which is based on a Stephen King story or series, actually. It's several thousand pages long, I think 8 books in total. That is, you know, sort of his version of Lord of the Rings, I guess you would say, but way weirder and deeply influenced by Western mythology, the sort of iconography and...
Well, the first book's called The Gunslinger, right?
Yeah, the main character is a gunslinger. It is... it's basically the most... The archetype that it comes closest to is probably the Man with No Name, the Clint Eastwood, you know, kind of anti-heroic cowboy. But as the series goes on, it becomes more of a kind of becomes a knight errant figure, sort of. He's always an anti-hero. He's a you know, but he's also kind of a you know, on a holy quest. Kind of the Dark Tower. The title is sort of a like a Holy Grail type, you know, ultimate quest kind of thing that he's in, and he comes from a sort of chivalric medieval society where instead of knights they're all cowboys, you know, they're you know the greatest gunslingers, you know, the six shooters, you know, that the world has ever seen, and it's a really deep, really interesting mythology that is, you know, heavily influenced by Westerns. Mostly, I would
Does
say.
Does that come out in the movie?
Yes. Well, not much. That's the thing. He's, you know, he fires a, you know, a pair of six shooters in the movie. and he's really good at shooting people in the movie. You know, he's really great with guns. But otherwise, you know, all most of the Western aspect of it is pretty much jettisoned in favor of... well, it's just not a good movie. It's just not a well-done version of it. It's actually kind of an infuriating version of it.
That's too bad.
Even if it was the same level of disappointment, and it had those Western elements intact, I would still say we had to do it for the podcast just so I could complain about it, and you could confront the insane nonsense that they've come up with for this film, and we could talk about Matthew McConaughey's ridiculous performance as the bad guy and, you know, all the ways that it disappointed me as a fan of the genre. But the truth is, it has absolutely nothing to do with Westerns. So, yeah. You know, other than he's got six shooters. You know, he doesn't even have a hat, you know. Stephen King was talking about this when the movie came out. He was like, well, mostly I was disappointed that he didn't have a hat. And, you know, the guy they cast, Idris Elba, is... excellent. He would have been perfect in a good version of this. He looks awesome as a cowboy. It's still just, it doesn't work, and it's frustrating. The film that reminded me most was David Lynch's Dune, if you recall that. I don't know what your familiarity with Dune
is. I saw it, but I don't remember very well.
Okay, well, Dune is the same kind of thing. It's this great sci-fi book that has turned into a movie that infuriated everyone and doesn't make sense, and, you know. Yeah. But even Dune is a better movie because David Lynch made it, and he's at least... a real filmmaker who does amazing, weird things. Anyway, so that's The Dark Tower, and sadly, not an episode of this podcast, but and one I can't recommend. So there's some movies we didn't like very much. so we're wrapping up here. You can find us online at westernswithdad.com, and also on the iTunes feed, of course. Now, if you want to hear episodes that are backdated, not all of the episodes are on iTunes. They are available on the website. If you go back into the history on the website, you can download all of them, including episodes like City Slickers that was inspired by movies like The Cowboys, or The Hateful Eight, starring Bruce Dern as an evil Confederate, or other things along those lines. Quigley Down Under and Shane and other John Wayne movies, The Sons of Katie Elder. Those are all available through the website. You can write us email at westernswithdad@gmail.com, and you can ask us questions or request specific titles like Wayne did for the Cowboys here, which we are now talking about. Or if that's too much, you could go to our web or go to iTunes and write a review there on iTunes, because that helps the visibility of the podcast. And if even that is too much, then even just a star rating on iTunes really helps us out as well. So any of those things would be very beneficial to us and the show. Thank you very much for tuning in this time. On the next episode, what are we doing on the next one, Dad?
Lonesome Dove.
Yeah, Lonesome Dove. The whole thing. The Robert Duvall, Tommy Lee Jones miniseries. So the entirety of Lonesome Dove. We are going to be talking about that next week as a major touchstone for Westerns. Right, Dad? Lonesome Dove?
2 weeks from today.
Yes, I always do that. 2 weeks. End of August. We'll be coming back with Lonesome Dove. So until then, that's it. Thank you.
All right. Adios, amigos.